Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. And I'm Janice, and I'm here with the whole team. We've got David and Michelle and Margaret, and this is a bonus episode where we're going to touch on specifically the management part of our podcast. So we're excited to all be here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yay! It's great to all be together.
Exactly. It's only on these bonus episodes that all four of us get to be together. So,
right. So you get the wisdom of four.
We hope.
Well, at least there'll be some wisdom here. I won't say that I'll be participating in it.
Exactly. So, so we one of the things we love to do at Fundraising Leadership is support new managers. You know, it's a big leap from like being a frontliner, you know, whatever you do in your nonprofit, like having your sort of sole contributor role and being really embedded in that. And then, you know, if you get promoted, it's really making this leap from sort of being responsible for your own work to being like the person who actually has to influence other people, empower other people, and really your success hinges on how you're going to be able to get other people to live up to their best work. So, you know, we do a lot of coaching around that area. We have some courses that we'll tell you about at the end, but we thought it'd be fun to sort of talk about like, what are some of the key components that we see of making this really vital transition that successfully for you, but more importantly for your organization. And so to kick it off, David, I'm going to invite you to kind of talk about like, what is the difference between being a manager, being a leader, and also wearing a coach hat?
Great. And I'll certainly invite all of you to pitch in on this. But I think I like where you're heading today, Janice, because you can be wearing these three hats. We call them leader, coach, manager at any given time. Once you start, even if you're not managing a team, you know, we assert that everyone is a leader. And if you are managing a team or if it's your first time managing a team, then, you know, maybe a few distinctions might be helpful here. So when I think about leadership, there's so much out there on leadership. In fact, you know, we do a lot of work in this realm also. The one thing that's becoming more and more clear to me is that leaders have foresight. I don't think we've ever even talked too much about this, but it's becoming more and more clear to me that leaders, I'll give you an example, like in my condo building, for example, we have a board. And you might think of the board as being a leadership role. Now, I'm not on the board currently. And it's so clear to me that electric power vehicles is on the horizon. It's already here. And yet our board is not talking about putting power charge stations in the parking structure. So this is actually a failure of leadership. So what we have here, where I live, not going to mention names, is a board that manages the facility. And actually, they do a really good job of managing this facility. They make sure we're on budget. They make sure that the facility is clean. And they make sure that repairs happen in a timely fashion. They make sure that the pool is operating. They make sure that all the teenagers are not out there drinking booze by the pool when they're not supposed to be. So, but they're not talking about what is over the horizon. So that's I hope that's a helpful example and distinction. I'd love to hear about the coaching piece of this. Again, I never see that in my condo building, but we train leaders and managers how to incorporate coaching skills. So I'd love to hear from you all on that.
Well, coaching skills in that situation, David, wearing a coach hat, I believe is the terminology you just used a minute ago. It's like in that example you give, it might be interesting for the condo board to wear a coach hat by asking the residents, you know, what do you see on the horizon here? What do you want us to be aware of? what might we not be looking at? It's a way of creating a bit of a collaborative way of creating leadership and creating from everyone in that instance. So that's one example of sort of being more coach-like, is asking a question that elicits some good information and, and an ability for people to think about how it might impact them or what they see on the horizon.
Yeah, I love that, Michelle, and it makes me want to yes and you with the idea, you know, since we hold that everybody is a leader, we're not actually asking for people to, you know, to have a crystal ball and to see into the future about what's next. But what we do often ask people to do is actually pay attention to your own intuition. You know, if somebody answers one of those questions, you get to check in without knowing for a fact, is it going to be right? Is it going to be wrong? You know, the feedback, the things that our folks are telling us, it's, you know, checking in and believing that you know things, you know, that you have ideas, using intuition.
Yeah.
And there's something about leadership too, that brings up for me, Margaret, and that's as a leader, we want to be aware of the impact we want to have. So being conscious of the words we use, being conscious of our communication techniques in order to have the impact that we desire rather than an unintentional impact. And that's very much a leadership quality.
Yeah, I would add to that, you know, leaders are intentional, just to bottom line it. I'm curious, Janice, your thought about thoughts about like coaching skills in the management realm, because they're important there too.
Yeah, and I think it sort of goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, like it's that shift is that suddenly I'm going to be responsible for getting things done less by doing them and more by influencing and empowering other people to do them. So I think the idea that really wearing your coach hat like allows you to have this ability to get people excited, you know, about what they're taking on, to show them that like actually, you know, what you just said, Margaret, it's like they have their own intuition, they have their own answers. So asking, like you said, Michelle, like these open-ended questions to get people to actually figure out like the how of doing their work, right? So as the manager, like you said, David, it's like you might be setting the budget, like you might be setting like this, these are the items that we need to get done, right? This quarter or this year or whatever. But then you don't really want to be the one who's figuring out how people are going to do that, because that's going to be overwhelming to you, right? And I think that's the biggest, like one of the hardest things that I see when people make this transition and we're coaching them is like, you got promoted because you were really good at your job. And so there's always a temptation to like step in, offer advice, like tell people how they might do something, right? Like let's say you're responsible now for a team and there's like somebody doing stewardship and you know a lot about stewardship. There's a great temptation to be like, here's exactly what you should do. And wearing the coach hat is really about like getting more possibilities, like helping them to find new answers. And then also I think, you know, we do a lot on accountability because we see that as being like something that's often missing on teams. And it's very hard for people to be accountable if they actually have not been part of, you know, coming up with the ideas that they're going to implement.
Yeah. And I want to also emphasize this distinction I was pointing toward initially between the manager and the leader. And this is not a judgment or good, bad, it's just what the roles entail. The expectation, if you're in an organization as a manager, is that your job as a manager is to execute. It's not to come up with necessarily, but the newfangled ways of executing. Unless you consult the leader or the leadership of your organization, say, I think there might be a better way of doing this. And that would be a good conversation to have. But there is an expectation, especially on fundraising teams, that you will execute. And so coloring within the lines is often expected, actually.
Yeah. And I think it's often, I think about it as like a manager role, and especially when you're in it for the first time, is often like the first time you're managing other people, right? And so you've gone from like, you know, I'm responsible for stewardship to like, now I manage a team and, you know, maybe I have three or four people who are all working on this. And then I often think like the first time, and you know, these are very blurry, but I often think about the first major leadership role is like, now I'm probably managing people who then manage people, right? To me, that's kind of the distinction in the work that we do, is like when we think that we're working with a manager or a team of managers, you know, doing a workshop or training. That's how I would think about it. So I don't know if everyone thinks about it the same way, but I sort of like that idea of like, it gets more complex, the higher, you know, the higher up you go and the more people you're managing, but particularly that switch from like directly managing to now managing those who manage others is kind of when you're like, oh, now I'm really a leader and it's my job to be more the visionary, like you're saying, Dave.
Yeah, and I like the distinctions that you both are making, depending on the role. Like, there really are clear distinctions depending on what you need to be in each role. And there may be different distinctions that you make depending on the situation. So as a leader, there might be a situation where you need to be more managerial, or there might be a situation where you need to be more coach-like. And so I think what we're pointing to here is being more conscious for the situation that you're in and your role and what's called for in your role. Be more conscious about which skills you need to bring in that situation, and knowing what those skills are, being clear with them in your own head as well.
Yeah.
So I hope we've thoroughly confused everyone, because these, and maybe intentionally so, because we do want to share that those, I think you used the word that these lines are blurry, and Janice, and
yeah,
intentionally so. We expect that you, even as a frontline fundraiser, will sometimes step in front and say, this is the direction we need to go in. Your intuition, that's what Margaret shared. You might have an intuition. You might be listening at level three. We talk about level three listening. And if you come into our coaching course, we'll train you how to do that, how to sort of really name what you see coming around the corner as a, you know, that's a leadership kind of component. Yeah. But you could be a frontline fundraiser and say, here's what I see happening in online fundraising.
Yeah. I think the other thing, you know, that's great to give yourself permission to do as a leader or a manager is to realize that you're wearing the wrong hat and then take it off and put on the other one. You know, like sometimes you try something and you're like, nope, that was not the right. That was not, you know, I came in as a manager, but in fact, what I really needed to come in as coach. And so it's permission to switch your hats.
I was just thinking that, Margaret, like if you go out, you know, and it's raining and you're wearing your sun hat, you've made the wrong choice, you know? So, you know, yes. Go home and change.
Right. Exactly.
Well, yeah. A lot of this work is grounded in values. So whatever your work is in a nonprofit world, we will assert many of you have been drawn to it because of the values that you hold and the values that your organization stands for. So I'd love to shift our conversation, whether you're a frontliner, whether you're a leader, whether you're a manager, whether you're learning coaching skills, it's all grounded in values. So who wants to take that on, Janice?
Yeah, I will take that on. Yeah. And actually, before I jump into that, I'll share one of my values, and then let's each share just one of our personal leadership values. So one of mine is space, which is many things, somewhat practical. Like I like to have space in my calendar. I like to have space in my home. Like I'm very minimalist, and I feel like at my best when I just feel like, I guess it's like a sense of possibility, like something could come in. And I feel overwhelmed when there's not space. So that's one of my values. What about you, Margaret? What's one of your core values?
I'm going to say courage is actually one of my core values. And I love it probably became, or I named it as a core value when I learned, you know, courage is very different from being fearless. Right? We talked about this, David, just last week, but courage is to actually be terrified or at least scared and do it anyway, which is feels so necessary in life to get where we want to go.
Nice. So. Yeah. What about you, Michelle?
The word that comes up for me first is community. So I feel like building community or being part of a community or having others feel like they're part of a community is just so much about of what I'm about. I've always been about it. Like I can even look back on when I was a little kid. Mm. You know, having people feel included, having people feel like they're part of something bigger than just them. And that's why I'm here working with you all at Fundraising Leadership. Like we are a community, a collaborative community to create better leadership in the fundraising and nonprofit space. So these things are super important to me.
Nice. And what about you, David?
I have a value called slop and grog. Slop and grog. I think you guys know my slop and grog value. So I'll describe it for the audience. Slop is a meal that you can eat out of one bowl. And grog is a good draft of beer. Slop and grog. So, but there are, it's like, what the hell is that as a value? So I'm sharing that with all of you because I encourage you to actually go for names of your values that are unusual. That encompasses a lot of my values around nutrition. So we have a value in our family, like getting together and eating together as a family, and nutrition, and also just being grateful for all the that we have in our lives. You know, we have a value around gratitude, and it also is in the not just nutrition, but wellness and well-being. When we sit around together and we share stories over a meal. And it also is a value, like, because I usually prepare these dishes with my wife Lillian. And so we have another value we call ninja cooking. And that's when we're in the kitchen together. And when we're like in a complete synchrony and we're like moving through the kitchen.
And I've seen it in action when you've made me dinner.
Anyway, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there, not the least of which is good food. Now, my daughters, on the other hand, you know, they don't always enjoy my slop creation. So, you know, for them, they can take it or leave it, depending on how good it is.
Yeah. And whether they enjoy grog is a whole different conversation.
It's another conversation. Exactly. But maybe for them, we'll let them have a little wine instead of grog.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing that. I had an urge to ask you that. And as everybody was speaking, I was thinking, you know, this, okay, so what are values, right? I mean, it really is just the things that we hold to be important for ourselves. And in coaching, it really is the foundation. I mean, it's where you start when you're coaching someone is helping them to articulate. We already have our values. It's just like bringing them to the forefront and really naming them. And I think they do many things. I see a lot in my coaching that it helps people focus more on how they want to show up. So again, it's like, especially if you're in a new manager role, coaching is much less about sort of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it, right? So for like, we'll take Michelle, for example, like, you know, for you, it's like, it's going to be really important in your team meetings as a manager to like foster the sense of belonging, right? So you're going to craft an agenda where you make sure like people have a chance to check in and talk and feel connected. And so so that's one way that I really love to use values with my clients is to say like, let's look at your values and see like, how do you want to prepare for that meeting? How do you want to show up in that meeting? And the other thing is, if there's something that you need to do, and when you're a manager, there's many things you need to do that might not be your favorite thing, you know, at least you can find, you can often find motivation in your values to kind of get yourself to do the things that are a little bit harder. So like for me, like one of the things I least like, you know, in running our business is kind of like admin tasks, right? Like sending contracts and sending invoices and that kind of thing. But I motivate myself when I do it on Fridays because because I have like a strong connection value, that it's like, you know, I promised people that I'm going to send them this, like I've committed to it. And also it's a part of building trust, you know, with a new client, is like to make sure that you get them everything they need and you get it to them in a timely manner and they know that they can count on you. So that makes it, makes me feel good about like opening that Excel sheet, you know, and doing that work that otherwise could, you know, could really feel like a drain on me. So, so I think, you know, in coaching, we use values a lot. And I think as a manager, a couple of things are critical, like identifying your own values is really important if you haven't done that work. And a lot of time people have done like organizational values work, but not personal values work. So do that work, you know, and make sure you know who you want to be as a manager. And then once you've done it yourself, then it's much easier to kind of notice in other people, right? And be able to acknowledge them, you know, for things that are actually much more meaningful to them. So, you know, if we told Michelle, like, oh, Michelle, you're being so independent and working well for, on your own, like, that's probably not a great acknowledgement for you, you know, but if we tell you that you create like a great sense of warmth and connection on our team, then that's going to make you light up a little bit more. So, so that's values, which I think is a perfect segue to trust. You're going to talk about Michelle, because once we sort of know each other's values, that is one way that we can start to develop more trust.
Yeah, that's right where my brain was going too, Janice, is that, you know, in order to really develop trust, either within ourselves, to trust ourselves or to trust others, there has to be some sense of an alignment with values. And an example of this that comes up for me is a individual coaching client that I have came into her new role of working with the CEO completely full of trust. Like, this is going to be great. This is going to be fantastic. And about 6 weeks to 2 months in, there were actually a lot of things that weren't working between the two of them. And what they needed to do was to sit down and say, this is my communication style. This is what is most important to me. What is your communication style? What's most important to you? How can we actually be working together better and stronger here? And a lot of the values came out in those kind of conversations that they needed to have in order to align around each other. So in that story of trust, trust felt high in the beginning and then broke down and then had to be rebuilt. Trust is, you know, you mentioned values as being like one of the foundations as we coach people. It so is, Janice. And trust is so important for people who are working together. I mean, it's absolutely vital. If trust doesn't exist, you can't take risks. You can't survive going through change together. You know, there's so much that actually can't happen if trust doesn't exist. And David and I do a lot of trust work with teams using the DISC assessment, which is a way that individuals can identify different behavioral styles that they have and also have a greater awareness for other people's behavioral styles in order to create a new dynamic, a new kind of way of having conversations and working together, where they actually appreciate the gifts that each person on the team is bringing, rather than like, what the hell did you just say? Like, that's not, you know, that's not how I work. Right, rather than a reactive way of looking at things.
So, riddle me this, Batwoman.
Yeah.
What is required for even trust? Especially, we talk about this in our work with teams. Something comes to get to trust. What's required? How do we have to be?
Yeah. Well, what do you all think?
Well, as you were talking, Michelle, I was thinking, I mean, this is one of the interesting things, right? When somebody comes in as a new manager, it can be a moment where trust is kind of paused, not always, right? But whether you're promoted and it changes the dynamic of you within the organization or whether you're new. And I think that really, you know, I know in some of our courses, like we've got some great resources. And what struck me so much is just this idea, like, first of all, you have to be good at what you're doing and do it consistently. You know, it's like, I mean, really, it's that basic to me is the starting point is people are not going to trust you unless you're doing your job well, you're doing what you said you're going to do, and you're doing it like in the time that you said you were going to do, right? So accountability is really key.
So what you're saying, two things that I'll encapsulate in two words, competence and integrity. Yes, mm-hmm. those are contributing factors to trust.
Yeah. And this is maybe less about a team or more about a team, you know, from a fundraising perspective, if your donors are also sort of part of your team. But I talk so much with people about, you know, don't hide stuff, right? There's so much an element of truth telling, and people who are invested in you, your team members, like they would rather follow your journey, even through its dark, hidey places, or through your places that didn't go as planned, or even your abject failures, you know, and what you learned from it. So I think so much of trust gets built by being authentic and honest, truth telling.
And vulnerable.
And that's the one where.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I like all that the you know, being honest, being straightforward, and like if you're a first-time manager and you're in your first meeting, or maybe it's not your first meeting, you might this would actually take courage to actually say something like, "Guys, I don't have a rat's ass about what it is to manage, but with together." We're going to do some great things.
Yeah, we're going to figure this out.
Yeah. We're going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on a learning curve. It's my first time. And I'm just sharing that with you because I'm a bit scared.
Yeah. Yeah. Vulnerability and transparency really are a big part of gaining trust. But when we act like we're smart and we actually have got all the answers, even if we don't, that actually builds walls.
Right. People have a pretty high meter for when something is coming at them and it feels like spin.
You mean we shouldn't fake it till we make it? Isn't that the advice you get everywhere?
That's totally. I'm pretty sure probably there's a t-shirt someplace with that on there.
Well, it's making me remember a time when I had a new manager and it didn't work out very well. And you know, it was a bit of the bulldozer effect, you know, that's the other thing. You don't create trust in a team by coming in and just being like, let's do everything different, even though I don't know you or any of what you are doing or what's
working. Stop talking
about
me, Janice. Stop talking about me in public. That's my middle name, bulldozer.
And, that was sledgehammer. Yeah.
Sledgehammer. Exactly. That is sledgehammer. But that's just with me.
Let's throw everything out and start over. We're like, whoa, okay. Well, so anyways.
Well, you're going to get feedback. You're going to get feedback as a manager. Like this is the thing, you know, you already get feedback if you're a frontliner from your manager, but now you're going to be getting feedback from your team. You're going to be getting feedback from the board. You're going to get feedback from the leaders in the organization, but you're going to be getting so much feedback. Let's talk about what that looks like. And you're going to have to be giving more feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to talk about feedback because I was so not good at this when I was first a manager. I've learned so much. So I think the first really important thing to say about feedback is reframing it as a gift of love is actually a really important step. And I know that that sounds a little woo-woo, but you know, if people don't care about you, then they don't give you feedback. You know, feedback is offered in the spirit of wanting to see you succeed. It's offered in the spirit of wanting you to learn, you know, how things are done here, or, you know, helping you succeed. And I think for many of us, we have a narrative like that it's criticism and it feels so awful to hear. So one of the tools that we talk about sometimes is if somebody gives you feedback and it feels more like criticism and it feels terrible, and you know, let yourself have your reaction to it, and then maybe look at, okay, if that was 2% true or 10% true, what could I actually possibly, you know, learn from that? So that's about receiving feedback. Again, offering feedback, like really nobody was worse at this than I was when I first became a manager. And I veered wildly into ruinous empathy, which is a Kim Scott term from Radical Candor. And it's what happens when you think that somebody's feelings are are so fragile and so valuable that you privilege that over moving the conversation ahead or helping them learn or improve in their job. So,
well, and just to make you feel better, Margaret, like Kim Scott does talk about that, it's not uncommon. Like if people are going to err, that's where most people err, is to actually like hold back or sugarcoat things so much.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
We have such a negative viewpoint of the word feedback. I mean,
yeah,
feedback sends chills up people's spines, like, oh gosh. But I love what you're bringing up, Margaret. Like, if you can look at feedback as like where I want you to grow or what I want to see more of in you that's already there, it's actually a place of growth rather than criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in some of our work, we distinguish between two types of feedback. One is to acknowledge what people do in their work. And that's just, you just be straight about it. You know, this was extraordinary work. This was, you know, C work. I think you can do better. You know, please go back and refine this proposal. It's not ready to go out to the donor. You know, it needs to be corrected. There's some typos in here. There's some grammatical errors. I pointed them out. And it doesn't quite have the tone it needs as a compelling case yet. That's just straight. So that's the doing part. And the harder part is to, and this is how we're trained as coaches and some of the work we do in our various programs, actually, including our coaching program, is how to give someone feedback about who they be. So why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because this is not something you're ever taught.
Yeah. Well, I think some of the important language that I've learned over the years is to help people understand that they have impact, sometimes that they didn't intend, mm-hmm. you know, and that's sometimes a good entry point into those kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. How about you guys? Where do you go with that?
Yeah, I'm actually curious, Margaret, because, you know, you were vulnerable enough to say that you were not good at it, right? So from where you are now, if somebody, you know, is listening and they're a new manager, like what advice do you now have? Cause you've made strides to become good at this, right? So what would you tell them?
I think I would tell them, you know, when you don't give feedback, the next thing that happens is you have to fire somebody, right? I mean, it's not like it goes well for anybody. And it ends up feeling, I think, far more punishing to, you know, to somebody who didn't get feedback on how to improve and then they lose their job. And I, you know, I think that actually happens with some regularity. So it was understanding, you know, that being avoidant was mm-hmm. actually leading down a far worse path than giving the person a chance.
Yeah, without honest, good feedback, there's a huge impact on individuals as well as on the organization. Like it's like, we're not going to go the direction we need to go. We're not going to accomplish what we need to accomplish.
Yeah. But offering feedback about, you know, how you be as opposed to something you're doing, right. You know, that comes up in all kinds of relationships, you know, personal relationships as well, right? And as David is saying, those are much harder conversations. Sending somebody back to their desk with a proposal versus, you know, there's something that happens when you talk with a donor that's not working. You know, there's a quality or there's a, those are hard conversations. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, and actually I was just listening, The Radical Candor, which is the book we're alluding to by Kim Scott, there's a podcast and I was listening to it this week. And there was another reminder, which I feel like she does every episode, is like feedback should be more about what people are doing right.
Yes. Thank you.
Than about what they're doing wrong, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, what David's saying is like, it's like acknowledging someone, like, you know, like for you, Margaret, it's like, if we see you being courageous, then to acknowledge, like, we know that you were scared, you know, I'm just making something up right now, but it's kind of like, you know, like you've been on a podcast recently as a guest, right? It's a little nerve-wracking. And it's like, so if we acknowledge that, like, we know you were a little bit nervous and we really, like, we know the courage that it took for you to do that. And we appreciated that as a team. Like, that's a way to acknowledge you in a way that's important to you, right?
Right.
And so I think, like, of course, these are all connected. This is not, you know, surprising, but it's like, you know, going back to like Michelle, like the piece about trust and building trust, but we're also back at values. It's like, we have to acknowledge how people are showing up in the world based on what is important to them, or else it's not going to land with them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's an example of the way you might acknowledge someone on your team who's been working with a donor that seems like it's been an interminable amount of time. A fundraising managers can be somewhat anxious to get gifts in, shall we say?
Sometimes.
So you could say, Margaret, you've just been so patient with that donor. I want to acknowledge you for that.
Yeah.
Even if the gift hasn't come in yet.
Mm-hmm. I think there can be beautiful feedback also in seeing something about a person, you know, that they don't see. I mean, yes, absolutely, to responding to what you know are their values. But also, you know, how often is it that we recognize a quality that somebody has that's just fledgling, or that they don't give themselves credit for having? And I think there's beautiful feedback possible in, you know, in offering that some brightness that you see in somebody, a light that you see that they may not even see yet.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, in coaching, we think of championing, which is like the idea of like, I'm calling forth something in you that is a seed that I know that can be more of. And yeah, that's really beautiful. So yeah, lots of, these are just a few of the things, you know,
we could talk like forever.
Which hat are we going to wear? You know, how do we build trust? How do we recognize our own values and then start to uncover other people's values? And then how do we get feedback? So we do want to give people, a resource, you know, if you're listening and it is a somewhat of a newer thing for you to be a manager, or you aspire, you know, you might not be there yet, but you might be in your role and thinking like, that's the next step for me. And I really aspire to a role where I get to manage people. We did want to tell you about a course that we have. It's actually a self-directed course online, and it's called You're a Manager. Now what? And we really designed this course, like we said, it's that moment where you move from being like a top performing professional, and now you're in a manager role, and you've got to make this big shift. So we deal with building trust and conflict, as well as a piece of that, how to understand your own values and strengths and motivations and those of others. And then Michelle alluded to DISC. We kind of get into DISC and another assessment, SDI, in the course. And then how do you create your vision and your purpose? And then there's also, because it's a manager course, there's some very practical things like how to use your calendar to actually get things done. Because as we talked about, part of trust is like being reliable, actually doing your job well, right? So you actually need to learn some really tangible skills as well, as a leader, or tweak them a little bit. So
yeah. And if you are a leader listening to, you know, we have a lot of leaders in the nonprofit world who listen to this podcast. And if you have a first-time manager, or you have somebody on your team that really wasn't trained, and you know, just send them into our course. It's really quite good. We've got a lot of great feedback on it, and it's super affordable. Like US, what is it, $49?
$49, yeah.
Yeah, and boy, we've gotten some great feedback on that. So if you have managers on your team and you want to just, you know, strengthen them, encourage them, send them to the course, and it's self-paced.
Yeah. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And yeah, it was nice to, like I said, be the four of us together on this bonus episode. And we want to thank you for listening. The podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership, which is the four of us. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. And we would love you to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. We're on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review. So thanks for being with us, everyone. Goodbye.